2, we were going to have to do some preparatory work before we get to chapter 1, verse 1. In my audacity, I thought that possibly I'd be getting to chapter 1, verse 1 this week. But as I look in Mr. Knock's book, A.E. Knock, there are 77 pages before he even comments on chapter 1, verse 1. So I think I'm going to follow the same pattern because there are some really big themes here that need to be covered. And I think that unless you get these main themes in mind, that then we're going to get into chapter 1, verse 1, and we're going to start analyzing the trees and forget what forest we're in. And I'm not going to let that happen because I'm a forest guy. I'm going to take the high road, the high viewpoint, and I'm going to make sure that we have that in place. And so there are elements in here. I told you we were going to talk about the eons. A.E. Knock, he has a whole chapter on the eons in here. And so we're going to talk about that. The key to the whole book of Revelation, and I just touched on this on day one, is Christ. Few people really consider what kind of investment God and Christ have in their universe. It's always like, what's going to happen to Earth? What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my family? What's going to happen to my country? Nobody, but nobody thinks about what this means to God and Christ. Why are they doing this? Yeah, that's a good question. God and Christ, nobody thinks about it. We're going to look at the scope of prophecy. Did you know that the prophets, as they went on, saw more and more? They started with a very dim view of the future, very hazy. In fact, they saw one return of Christ, the early prophets. We're going to talk about those prophets that saw in the future one appearance of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, as prophecy continued in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Scriptures, they began to see that there were actually going to be two comings of Christ, one in humiliation and one in glory. If you had said that back in the days of the early prophets, they would have laughed you off of the scene because it was unthinkable that that would happen and you would have been called a dreamer. But as prophecy unfolds, we are seeing more and more. Now, last week we talked about the 70th. Oh, by the way, this is Martin Zender. Did I say that? No, I didn't introduce myself. Coming to you once again from my bunker, safely ensconced in my bunker in South America here. The 70th heptad of Daniel's prophecy. This is huge. We're actually going to break this down. There is a chart here that I'm going to share with you, and it breaks down all 70 of those seven-year time periods. And then we're going to talk about the 3 days. Remember I told you God's calendar is big. I've always told you this. We have 30 squares on our calendar. God has 5 squares on his, if you count the eons, but there's an even larger calendar. And this is important for you to know because it comes into play in chapter 1 of the book of Revelation. There are 3 giant time periods. There's man's day, the Lord's day, and God's day. You think that sounds kind of important? It is, because John said that he came to be in the Lord's day. Oh, that must be Sunday. He came on Sunday. The Lord's, we all know the Lord's Day is Sunday. See, this is stuff we have to straighten out before we even get to chapter 1, verse 1. But be patient with me. We're going to get there. 3 epical days. Now, there are also literal days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But in God's epic program of the eons, we have 3 days. Man's day. Just get to give you this briefly, we're going to go into great detail and great specificity, if I may use that term. We're going to talk about man's day. We're in man's day. Once you, when you realize where you are on God's calendar, things are going to go a little better for you. A little, not a lot. Don't worry. Things aren't going to go great, ever, until we're out of here. But it does help you to know that when you're in man's day, you're not going to expect anything great. God's not going to show up. He's not going to, you know, do a song and dance on the top of Mount Ararat. We're in man's day. Man is slogging through a protracted period of frustration and ineptitude and all sorts of ugly adjectives. But coming is the Lord's day. This is the day when our Christ finally gets his due. And he's going to come back in glory upon this planet. Now, I look forward to that. I'm happy for him. That's why I say we need to begin looking at what this day means, what this time period coming up means to God and to Christ. He's finally coming in glory. No little baby anymore in the manger in Bethlehem. No, he's been there, done that. No more suffering on the cross. No more crucifixion. No more watching, feeling his enemies spit in his face. Those days are over. Now he's returning in glory. So the big theme, and then God's day, boy, wait till I talk about that. You're going to love that. It all has to do with Revelation, because John said, I came to be in the Lord's day. We need to pinpoint that time period. You need to know where you are on the map, just like at the mall. You know, where am I? Oh, I'm in front of, you know, Sears. So if I go down here, I'll get find the restrooms. You need to know where the restrooms are. You need to know where the exits are. You need to know the map. And how many people really stop to look at the big map? This is a big map. Man's day, the Lord's day, God's day. Eon 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, here's one of the key elements and in the study of the book of Revelation. This is it. Literal or figurative? Literal or figurative? That's huge, because so many people confuse this and they take things that are meant to be literal figuratively and they spiritualize away things to the point that the entire book of Revelation has practically been spiritualized away. And I'm not going to let that happen. So that's another huge consideration. What did I tell you I was going to talk about? Yes, well, we're going to look at the structure. Do you know that every book of the Bible has a structure? It's a literary structure, and it's inspired. We're going to look at the introduction to Revelation and the conclusion. All right, now, so we're not going to keep you in total suspense here. I'm going to show you the end of the story and compare it to the beginning so you can see that there's a pattern here. How many, you know, people have told you there's a pattern in the book of Revelation? It looks like a hodgepodge of, sometimes seems unrelated events, but it's not. Okay, and then the very first section is the prophetic section of Revelation. Revelation has a structure. We're going to look at the skeleton. So we're going to get a thorough dealing here. We're not going to go over it lightly. I'm not going to just emphasize the sensational stuff. You may want me to get right into prophecy. You might want me to get right into Islam or Christianity. Where's the United States in prophecy? Where's Saudi Arabia in prophecy? When's Babylon going to be built? When's the false temple going to come? Where's the location of the temple? All these sensational things, you know. Where's Britney Spears? Where's Kim Kardashian? Who cares? We got to settle. We got to get some foundation stones in place. And when I learned how to play the drums, this is actually related topic. I wanted to start on the drum set. Just give me a drum set. And I wanted to bang away and I wanted to play Wipeout and I just wanted to be the coolest drummer ever. But what did my parents do to me? My mean parents, they made me get a snare drum, one drum, and I learned the rudiments. I learned how to, there's 26 rudiments in drumming, like the paradiddle. It goes like this. Paradiddle, hear it? That's a basic drumming element. That's not very fun. You don't hear anybody on pop radio playing paradiddles. No, you. How long can you listen to this, huh? And I had to play this over and over again until I learned syncopation between my left and my right hand. That's no fun. Then there's the triple rhadmacue. That's boring, but it's like learning the alphabet. You have to get to the basics. We're going to do that. I told you I was going to talk about Paul's gospel on Monday, so here it is. It's Monday, Paul's gospel. Paul's gospel does not fit into the scheme of the book of Revelation. That's because those who embrace the gospel of the circumcision will not be here, to be frank with you, when the most severe judgments of the book of Revelation take place. And I have a verse that proves that from 2 Thessalonians. I'm not going to give it to you yet. I'm just whetting your appetite here. But I compared these days to the days of Noah, only because Jesus did it. So I feel kind of safe following in his footsteps there. These are like the days of Noah in that we're looking at a gigantic change coming upon this earth that you just, you know, you can hardly believe it when you read about it, but it's going to happen. In that day, in Noah's day, God made an ark. He made an ark for 8 people because he's saving very few people. Right now, very few people are coming into the truth. I don't know if you've noticed that. And why is that? Because these are days compared to those of Noah. And in the days of Noah, God saved 8 people among 8 billion. I may have told you this before. We did some research in Pennsylvania, found out that in the days of Noah, we wanted to know how many people were alive then. And I always thought it was a few, maybe 100,000, 200,000, maybe 1 million, 5 million at the most. Ladies and gentlemen, there were 8 billion people alive. Of course, nobody can know for sure. you know, because the census taker drowned. So, but there were 8 billion people, according to several websites. They looked at the procreation rates. The people were just having babies like crazy. That's what they did for a living. They had babies because there was no internet and no cell phone coverage, and there was no satellite television. So all you did was had sex, and they had lots of babies. And so the population of the earth, by the time Adam, remember, people are living to the age of 700 or 800 years old. Methuselah was over 900 years old. They have lots of kids. So 8 billion people, and he saves 8. So this is man's day. In man's day, God's calling out a handful. Same with the Apostle Paul. This gospel of grace is our rescue out of the coming indignation. Paul uses that phrase. Again, I'm still just touching some introductory points, but I'm never going to let you forget Paul throughout this. That he's our rescuer out of the coming indignation. So why wouldn't I equate this gospel to a boat? To an ark, by grasping onto Paul's gospel. And you can do that by getting my book, The First Idiot in Heaven, right? We're in the last days. I honestly believe that. You're going to see why I believe it as we get into this study deeper and deeper. You need to grasp onto the evangel, the gospel that's for you, and that's Paul's gospel, right? For my book, The First Idiot in Heaven. You can get it at martinzender.com where you are right now. I think it's a great book, not just because I wrote it. It is a compendium of truths for today. All right, we're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to talk about God and Christ, what it means to them, what it means to the saints, this coming day of indignation, what it means to mankind at large, and to the spirit world. Oh, the spirit world is running the show here on this planet. Talk to you tomorrow.